Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening to all of our listeners on today. Yes, you are now tuned in to Facing Your Fears Radio Talk Show, hosted by yours truly, Evangelist Dr. Norma Chapman. As always, listeners, let us bow our heads for our opening prayer. Father God, we thank you for another great opportunity to go forward in radio land on today. Praying that someone out there we can encourage, Father God, that maybe need encouragement on today. We have such a great show on today, Father God. We ask that you touch our speakers on today. Bless Facing Your Fears Radio Talk Show, that we may be able to help someone as we journey here and there. And this is my prayer in Jesus' name. Amen. All right, listeners, we have another exciting show, another awesome show prepared for you on today. Yes, for the first time on Facing Your Fears, we have two episodes back-to-back on today. And we have on today our first special guest will come on, and that's none other than the commissioner here in the city of New Orleans and around our surrounding area, none other than Commissioner Lombard Barroso. He's going to correct me with that last name, okay? We also have in the studio with us, be coming on shortly after him, none other than awesome judge out of Baton Rouge, Louisiana, which is the chief judge there, none other than Judge Donna Orr Johnson. He will be giving his presentation at 5 o'clock. But without further ado, I am going to bring in our first guest on today. But remember, listeners, you too can join in on this awesome conversation just by pressing that number one on your phone. If you have any questions, comments, I just want to share your thoughts and experience on today's topic. The first topic for today would be understanding the Public Service Commission. And then I'm going to bring into the studio now with me live Commissioner Lombard. How you doing today, Commissioner Lombard?
Oh, thank you, Dr. Chapman. I want to thank you for giving me an opportunity to come on your show and talk to your listeners. I think it's really great that you've allowed this type of discussion, because the utility and the Louisiana Public Service Commission really affects everybody, because everybody gets a utility bill. And it's really important that people understand how that works and what we do at the commission.
All right, but before we begin the presentation on today, would you give our listeners a short bio about yourself, and then after the bio, listener, he will go straight into his presentation. A short bio about yourself, Commissioner.
All right. Well, first of all, like you mentioned, I am Lambert Boissier III, and I'm the current Louisiana Public Service Commissioner for District 3. Now, I'm born and raised in New Orleans and in Louisiana, of course. And so I'm a favorite son of New Orleans. I'm proud to say that. I love my city and I love my state. I was elected to the Public Service Commission a couple terms ago, but I'm seeking one more term currently. But currently I'm also the chair of the Louisiana Public Service Commission. I'm educated here. My background is in various areas of business, banking, law, and even international trade. And I've served as a public official going on about 20 years from the time I was really young. At about 30 years old, I started my political career. And I'm proud to say that I've served people in and out of New Orleans and Louisiana, and I really, you know, I'm motivated by helping people improve their lives in Louisiana, their lives in New Orleans. And as long as I can find a way to give people a better quality of life, I am motivated to continue doing my job. So that's who I am, and that's what I stand for, and I'm glad to give the introduction.
All right. We thank our commissioner for that short bio about himself, but we're not going to hold time. We're going to let him go into his presentation on today, which here we have two factors he will be speaking about, very important. The first one, he's going to be talking about the jurisdiction can be broken down into two areas, and he's going to talk about those geographic areas that he feels that the city needs a change in, and what he has been doing the last years that he has been commissioner, and what his vision is going forward if elected again. And I don't like to use the word if. When elected again, the commissioner is going to discuss with the city his vision on what he's going to bring about a change and what he has been trying to do and has not yet been successful, but hopefully it will come to commission when he take office once again. Without further ado, he's going to be talking to us about understanding the Public Service Commission. And at this time, Commissioner, you may begin your presentation.
All right, great. Well, first of all, I want to talk about the commission and the jurisdiction of the commission as far as understanding it. First of all, the District 3 of the Louisiana Public Service Commission is a really large and diverse district. It starts in New Orleans, and it goes all the way to Baton Rouge and includes the river parishes and both sides of the Mississippi River. And that jurisdiction is large. It has almost 1 million people inside that district. It's very diverse. We have both urban areas, the two cities of Baton Rouge and New Orleans. We have country and rural areas. We have business people, and we have rural people. We have small businesses and tourism, as well as industry and farming and hunting and fishing. The ethnic backgrounds and diversity is large. We have people of all races, creeds, and colors. We have the ports. We have industry. And all of those things and all of those people have different uses for our utilities, our power, our lights, our natural gas, and our water. And so we have to take all those things into account and all those people and their needs into account when we make decisions at the Public Service Commission. I mentioned the jurisdiction of being between New Orleans and Baton Rouge, but I want to make one distinction. We don't actually regulate inside New Orleans. Ours is the Louisiana regulatory body, and the city council regulates the utilities inside New Orleans itself. But we make state policy. Okay, so I'm the commissioner from New Orleans that works in Baton Rouge for the people, the voice of New Orleans in Baton Rouge. And so I take our messages to regulate on behalf of the entire state. And but the thing that I do is I work with the city council and work with the Entergy New Orleans and the utilities within the city to share information, to advise, and to work together to help make the best decisions we can. But ultimately, that decision is up to the city council. Now, to get back to the jurisdiction to some degree, we also it's also important to know what utilities are and what type of companies we use to regulate with. Now, of course, you know, electricity, that's the big one. Entergy, the co-ops, CLECO are major electric companies, and people always pay attention to the electricity and the electric bills. We like our lights to come on. We want our air conditioner to work. And when those things aren't working, we almost can't do anything. We can't get online. We can't do our work. We can't go to school. And we can't comfortably even be in our homes without power. So people know all about electricity. But we also regulate other things as well that I find incredibly important as well, like water, sewer, which is wastewater. We regulate some telecommunications and even some internet things and phone issues. We regulate natural gas to a large part, and some pipelines. We also regulate transportation and common carriers. So outside of the city of New Orleans, things like taxi cabs, interstate trucking, some of the big trucks you see are regulated by us, some railroad issues you see. So it's a very diverse subject matter. And all of those things fall under either utilities or common carriers. Now, the number one thing I'd like to do, like you said, if, but when reelected, is to find ways to continue to bring the cost down. We have to continue to fight these companies to bring the cost down. Now, I know everybody's suffering with high bills, but let me tell you, just this year, we voted to knock $60 million that Entergy was trying to put on the bills, knock that off. So those are costs that we didn't have to pay. And we also worked extremely hard to get money for people as they were suffering with high utility bills during the summer months and the high heat. And we got money for people to be able to pay their bills and work on issues like that. Those are the kind of things we work on at the commission. And so the jurisdiction is important, and working to help people is important because the money you save can go back into your family in other ways. You can buy groceries. You can pay for gasoline because that's up too. All those things are skyrocketing. So the number one thing that we can control at the commission is your utility rates And as much as we can, we bring it down as far as we can because we're always fighting for the people of Louisiana.
All right, Commissioner, I have a question for you. When reelected, and I know that you've been doing a great job here in the city of New Orleans, Baton Rouge, and the surrounding areas, but when reelected, one of my biggest concerns here in the city of New Orleans is senior citizens. You know, young people can do other things to help or pay their utility bills and water bills. And, you know, our sewage bill is sky high.
Mm-hmm.
But senior citizens, they worked when they were young, like the shipping child once was young, but now I'm old. I've never seen the righteous forsaken or see big break. Even though they're retired, they check, they're still living on a monthly income. And the sewage is real high, water bill is high, as well as electric, as you mentioned earlier. What, I know you're working hard trying to bring about a change, but what is the number one change that you've been working on and been fighting for a change but has not been successful, but hopefully when reelected, that you would make continue to fight concerning those issues? I hope I didn't ask two questions in one because I have a habit of doing that.
That's all right. I can answer two questions in one. I think I can handle it. I think that's a great question, or maybe two great questions, but those are two things or issues that people really care about right now. First of all, on our senior citizens, I'm going to address because that's really important to people. You hit the nail on the head when you talk about our senior citizens, because many senior citizens are on fixed income. They don't have the ability to necessarily go out here and make a whole lot more money in their lives or should be spending their time doing that either at this point. So not long ago, last month or so, we have a Consumer Bill of Rights at the commission, and I did a directive to rehear and update our Consumer Bill of Rights. And what I think should be in the Consumer Bill of Rights are issues that matter to the public pertaining to utilities and what people can expect and what people can get. And one of those things is to help our senior citizens get cheaper rates than everyone else. Because what happens is utility rates will, like every other cost, go up. Everything goes up. That's just nature of life. Nothing costs the same that it did 20 years ago. But even utilities. But people's salaries don't go up when they're fixed, you know, and we have to recognize that. And that doesn't mean people should struggle and be harmed by it. So I'm trying to figure out the best way. This is something I've brought up before, but I'm going to continue to bring up until we get a policy that allows for senior citizens to try to either fix their utility rates or fix their rate or get a more favorable rate. And that's something we're going to work on for our senior citizens because they need to keep their lights on, and we need to help them do that. In addition to that, not only the senior citizens, but everybody needs help too.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the problems with high rates is not just that the rates are high, but when you have electricity, what the utility companies do, they have to generate that electricity. And they generate that electricity by using some type of fuel, meaning natural gas or coal or nuclear or solar. The problem with that is if the price of gas goes up, then the price of your electricity goes up.
Exactly.
And we have little control over that because that's a commodities market. We all got to pay higher gas prices, even energy.
Right.
So we can't expect them not to pay. I mean, we all pay. So what we try to do is find a fuel that is not subject to increases. And one of those things is solar. Solar does not fluctuate with the market because the sun shines just about every day, unless it's raining. The sun is shining every day. Like, you know, the sun comes up every morning. And so as long as that continues to happen, we have electricity or sun rays that can be collected and converted into electricity. We don't have to ask Russia for natural gas. We don't have to ask the Saudis for gasoline or anything like that. We don't have to import coal from the north or build nuclear power plants. We just have to put solar panels out, and the sun shines on them and creates electricity. It's oversimplified, but the fact of the matter is, it is almost market proof. It's rate hike proof. So if we can get more fuels like solar in creating our electricity, there's less chance of the prices going up with the whims of the market. And that gives us stability, and that gives us a lower overall price and much more predictability.
There you have it, listeners. I have two more questions for you, but I'm going to deal with those questions right now. We're going to bring in a caller. Our code 504. Last four digits of that number is 9003. Caller from our code 504. Last four digits is 9003. I'm going to bring you in now for...
Hi, Commissioner. Thank you for taking my question. I wanted to ask about, I've noticed storm costs on my bill, and I was wondering if you could provide an explanation as to why we are paying that and what it is.
Okay, that's a really good question. I want to thank you for the question because I get that a lot. And I'll tell you what it is. When you have storm costs on your bill, that's because of one of the hurricanes that have affected your area. What happens is, as you know, in Louisiana, we get hurricanes, and I'm so glad we didn't get any this year. Either in August or September or October so far have we gotten any storms. It may be the first time in maybe 50 to 100 years that has happened. I have to check the stats on that. It's almost never happened for us. But we were due a year off because over the last few years we've been hit over and over and over again by storms. And what happens when the hurricanes come, they damage the utility system. It damages the grid. It damages the poles and the wires. And the power goes out. And then we get Entergy and CLECO and all the big companies to connect or reconnect those wires, put those poles back up, get the transmission lines out again, and rebuild it. But all of that comes at a cost, and all of that is expensive. At the end of the day, when those storm costs are all evaluated, we have to put that on the bills to get paid for. Now, I want to be clear, we actually don't, as the commission, we don't actually put that on the bills. That is automatically going on the bills no matter what. That is the law, that is regulatory law. That's the same in Louisiana as it is in every other part of the country. That the U.S. Supreme Court says that prudently incurred costs have to be on the bills. But what we do at the commission is we don't just put that cost on the bills, because if we did that, sometimes those costs are over $1 billion of repair. Everybody's bills would double or triple if that happened. So we would never let that happen like that. So what we do is we go to the bond market and we take that cost and we securitize it. Now, you know, everybody doesn't know what the bond market is, but what you do is you actually borrow the money from the bond market. And so the public doesn't have to bear all of the costs at one time. But what we normally do, we spread that over some time, usually about 10, 15 years over time at an extremely low. We hear about prices, rate hikes going up, interest rates going up, but not these. These are locked in at really low rates, like 1 and 2, 3% at the most. And we lock in those prices over like 15 years. So you can see the storm charge at about, you know, maybe a couple of bucks a month instead of 50 to 100 bucks a month. It's only like 2, 3, 4, 5, maybe even as high as 10 sometimes, but never more than that each month. And there's a misconception that we put the storm cost on the bill. No, the storm cost would be on the bills whether we vote on it or not. But what the commission does, we vote for the best way to put the storm charges on the bill, because if we just let them put it on the bills, it would be too high. So we vote to finance it. And by voting, we allow the ratepayer to have not as much of an impact of the sticker shock of the high bills. It's very low and manageable. And then we hope that a year or two goes by where we don't have a storm, so those costs can come off the bill rather than linger and keep going up. So we work really hard so that people are not overcharged in the aftermath of the storms, and that people get their power on as quickly as possible. And those are the things that we work for, and those are the things that we do and vote on at the commission.
We have we have two shows scheduled back to back on today, and we do want our commissioner to have an opportunity to do his closing statement. But we want to thank the caller for calling in. I hope that our commissioner was able to answer your question. There's so many questions, important things that we can ask the commissioner. I can think of at least 20 of them. But we have such a short show today. But what I would like to do, Commissioner, just before election time, maybe do a special show for maybe on a Wednesday or Tuesday or the week of before the election, and bring you back on so you can be able to have at least 45 minutes to an hour, because there's so many people who have questions that they want to know. So many of I'm interested in our youth, whether or not you have the commissioner, what are the city doing in the line of getting jobs prepared for the youth to keep them busy, mm-hmm. Give them more training in the field, in that field of what you're doing in reference to the utilities, electrical work and plumbing and things like that. You know, because we do need to keep our youth, utilize our youth while they're young. And when they come out of school, what jobs can be available in that department? I know you can't answer that, but at least you can give us some type of lead or idea so we can keep our youth involved in what the city of New Orleans and Baton Rouge and your surrounding areas are doing. Now, we only have 5 minutes, Commissioner, to give us your closing statement to bring your presentation to a close. And I want to thank you for being a guest on Facing Your Fears on today. And remember out there, listeners, don't forget that our commissioner is rerunning for his seat again as a commissioner here in the city of New Orleans, Baton Rouge, and the surrounding areas that he served. And we do want to support him, and he has our prayers as he go forward with the path that God has put him on. Commissioner, your closing statement, please.
Thank you very much. And once again, I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to come on your wonderful show and speak to your listeners, because this information is so vital to all of us in Louisiana. Once again, I'm Lambert Boissier, and I'm glad to bring some information about the Public Service Commission to everybody. And I think you had some great follow-up questions about jobs and our youth and so many other things. I would love to come back and discuss it. But once again, I'm Lambert Boissier, your Public Service Commissioner, your incumbent Democratic Commissioner. And like mentioned, not only do I work hard for people every day, I challenge the utility companies to diversify their fuel mix. Get off the dirty coal and bring in solar and wind power so we can have a cleaner environment, a more sustainable fuel mix, and better electricity. I challenge them to bring in jobs, good, clean, environmental jobs, so our youth can have a future and good careers in the energy sectors and other places. And we can eliminate some of this dirty environment that we have and go to a cleaner environment that improves the health of everybody, so we can reduce things such as asthma and other problems that we can get from pollution. And even to some degree, people even talk about the cancer in the air. We want to make sure we have the cleanest environment in Louisiana. But more importantly than that, I think we have to continue to work to get the rates down. I want to say it again. I'm in New Orleans, but I represent us in Baton Rouge. The rates, the utility rates in New Orleans are regulated by the city council. So if you're in the city of New Orleans, they're your regulator for your particular utility bills. But we oversee everything in Baton Rouge on the state level. So I'm your voice in Baton Rouge. I'm your incumbent. I'm the chairman of the commission, and I get along with everyone up there. I work hard and I'm well-respected. I'm so well-respected, if you pay attention, I'm running for re-election, and I'm endorsed by some people, the other people that we care about, like the governor, John Bel Edwards, our congressman, Troy Carter, our former congressman, Cedric Richmond. I'm also endorsed by many of our other elected officials and sheriffs and state reps and councilmen throughout the entire district. Most recently, I'm proud to announce that I was endorsed by the AFL-CIO because I work for the unions. I've always helped people who are working people, teachers, plumbers, and our laborers, and I got their endorsement. I've been endorsed by the Democratic Party. I also was endorsed by our newspapers, The Advocate, the Times-Picayune, the New Orleans Tribune, and I'm very proud to announce I'm also endorsed by the Louisiana Weekly. And I'm also endorsed by the Gambit newspaper. So I'm clearly getting all the big endorsements because people know who I am. They know how hard I work, and my reputation in this industry is well known and liked. Once again, I could go on, and I'd love to come back and finish up with you and maybe have another opportunity. But I want to just thank you, Dr. Chapman, for giving me the opportunity to come before you. And I'll be more than happy to come back and discuss anything your listeners want to hear. Thank you.
Thank you. The most important question, what is your number that you're running on the ballot for the election?
My number is number 48 on the ballot. Lambert Boissier, Public Service Commissioner, number 48.
There you have it, listeners, number 48 on the ballot for to reelect our awesome commissioner back into office. so he can continue doing the great works that he's doing. And I want to thank all of our listeners. But do not hang up, listeners, because we have another great show prepared for you. The next special guest will be none other than Chief Judge, Baton Rouge Chief Judge, Donald Johnson. And he's coming on shortly. We want to thank Commissioner for coming on, facing your fears. And I'm excited about this show on today, Commissioner. My prayers go with you as you continue your task, as you continue the path that God has put you on. And we know that God is in control at this time. And we ask all our listeners, our citizens, to pray for you as you continue your job here in the city of New Orleans. I want to just let you know that you've been doing a great job, and I know that you're going to continue doing a great job when elected again. God bless you and God keep you.
Oh, thank you very much. I really appreciate you, your vote and your prayers. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Commissioner. All right, listeners, we're going to go straight into our next show. Now, if the studio shuts down for the next show, I need you to just call back in the same number again. Then you'll be able to hear our next special guest. But hopefully we can continue rolling the way we're rolling. But at this time, I'm going to bring him in live. And I'm going to say good afternoon to Judge Johnson.
Good afternoon. Judge, how are you today?
I am great. How are you doing there in Baton Rouge?
Dr. Chapman, I'm doing very well in Baton Rouge, and I want to thank you for giving me an opportunity to come on your show.
Well, it's a pleasure having you on our show once again, listeners. You're now tuned in to our second presentation on today, and that topic will be Domestic Violence Intervention Court. And the judge is going to talk to us, and he's going to share with us exactly what that court does in reference to domestic violence. As you know, October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and we all should be educated on or have some type of knowledge on domestic violence, because domestic violence plays a big part of our society, today's society. So many couples have lost their lives due to domestic violence. But without further ado, because I think the judge has another presentation after this one, another interview, we're going to bring him in, and he's already live in the studio with us, but we're going to let him give us a short bio about himself. Shortly after, then he's going to go straight into his presentation. Judge, give us a short bio about yourself.
Yes, I'm an old school boy, born in New Orleans on Tulane Avenue, born there at the Big C, for those that know the Big C in New Orleans. That's where I was born. My mom basically traveled to New Orleans, gave birth, and then came back here. And I've been here mostly in Baton Rouge the majority of my life. But nonetheless, I went to school first time after graduating from high school. I went to Southern University and got an engineering degree, and then I worked in that field for a little while, and then decided to go into law and do some social justice work. And I've not been able to leave out of the law field. I practiced law for a while, and then I left that and went into being a city court judge in Baton Rouge for about 7 years, almost 7 years. And then I left that job and went to the state court where I am today, and that's been almost 23 years. So I've got a lot of experience sitting and presiding over cases, and I'll tell you, I've presided over almost every type of case that has ever come to court, so I've got a long history of service, but I also have judicial education, which is very, very important. Most of my colleagues don't get judicial education, which is an advanced degree in judging or in administering the courts. So I've gone in and got that kind of academic degree and practical degree with other degrees that I've earned over the past few years. So I'm out here now as an expert designing the new courts for tomorrow, the new models for tomorrow, and I'm doing that on the 19th Judicial District Court in East Baton Rouge Parish. Right now, that's where I sit. I'm the chief judge there of East Baton Rouge on the 19th Judicial District Court, State Court. We have a total of 15 judges, and we do the state's civil and criminal jurisdictional work here in our state capital. I'll say this, We are the largest populated parish in the state of Louisiana. Perhaps a lot of our listening audience don't know that, but East Baton Rouge Parish is now the largest populated parish in the state of Louisiana. And I want to share that with everybody who's listening, because it's very important that you know that you're the majority, and you want to use that majority status to make sure that things are represented for all people. So I'll start with that premise, and then I'll ask my illustrious Dr. Chapman to let the audience know that I'm ready to talk about how we're going to get our court structured to deal with domestic violence. And that's what I came to the show to talk about. I'll be happy to answer any questions. And Dr. Chapman is right. I do have another show that I'll be leaving to attend shortly after this session. But I'm here to listen. I'm here to share. And I'll stop there and see if Dr. Chapman would like to ask anything else. Otherwise, I'll go and explain to the audience what I'm talking about when I say a domestic violence court.
With only one question I would have for you, because we have such a short time, and I do want them to get as much knowledge and education in reference to domestic violence possible on today. And having you as a chief judge and as a judge that presides in court and are sitting now, how does domestic violence, or how many domestic violence cases has you heard, and what do you think about the victim versus the abuser? Now, the reason why I ask that question, because I feel that if we have less abusers, we will have less victims. And if we can provide more education to our young people before they get into that type of environment, you know, sometimes, you know, some cases, some of the abusers come from a domestic violence environment. But we need to put more effort into educating them that they do not have to go down the same path their mother, their father went down, or their brother, their sister, to have experience. So what can we do to make a difference in getting more awareness to help the abusers, so we can have less victims?
Well, let me address that first part of your question about the number of incidents. The number of incidents, for example, in East Baton Rouge Parish, on any given day, people that are actually arrested for domestic abuse or domestic abuse relations charges, on any given day, of approximately 20 to 25 arrests, out of that number, you can estimate at least 25% of those arrests for crimes are domestic violence related. And that's on a daily basis. So you have almost 20 to 25% of every person who's arrested every day in East Baton Rouge Parish. They are arrested because they're in some type of violent behavior or aggressive behavior or controlled behavior, a person that supposedly they're in love with. They're in love with. Mm-hmm. So that's the phenomenon, and that's the data. Now, I'll share this with you. There is no particular race. There is no particular gender that is involved in this conduct. It's across the board. Now, we do see some variations in the types of conduct, other than that, this type of behavior exists across the board with all races, all ages, and all genres, because it involves relations. It involves emotive issues. So what we're finding is that if we're not proactive, if we're just going to be a reactionary criminal justice system, and what do I say when I say a reactionary criminal justice system? That is our existing model. For the most part, criminal justice and law enforcement and courts and corrections are reactionary. We get involved when the conduct has, when the violence and the criminal conduct has already happened. And so law enforcement gets involved. They get a call, and they come out to investigate. But the conduct that causes the investigation, that leads to the arrest, that leads to a not guilty or a guilty, that leads into jail or leads into supervision on bail or supervision under a sentence or incarceration, that's all happening after the conduct has already occurred. So we start mm-hmm. with that premise. People are saying, well, why isn't police able to prevent this conduct? What's going on with the criminal justice system? Aren't you all supposed to stop this conduct? Well, largely, we're supposed to adjudicate it after it happens. But that's the old way of doing business. That's the old model. We're moving mm-hmm. to a new model now. We're moving mm-hmm. into prevention. Prevention. And that's why it's so important that the traditional models, the law enforcement entities, courts, and the jails and corrections, the prisons, start doing proactive work in the community. Start using resources that we've traditionally mm-hmm. used after the fact and use those resources in front of the conduct. So what does that look like? Well, it means that we go and let the people know who are involved in this conduct. Whether you be the victim or whether you say I'm the defendant, but she started or he started it, we want you to know that when you're having challenges, we want you to know that when you're having difficulty, we want you to know that before your relationship explodes on us and one mm-hmm. of you are charged with a crime, that you have a ready number and a ready team there in the community that can come and assist you. So that's what we're talking about, developing models that will come out and try and administer your situation and counsel and redirect you so you never get to come into an arrest. So you never get to the situation you've got to call the police. You've got to mm-hmm. call the police because you say to me, Judge, I didn't want him to go to jail. I just wanted him out of the house. Well, there are different ways to do that besides jail. Uh-huh. Besides yeah. getting him arrested, right?
That's like, Judge, something I wanted, because I didn't want the show to go by without me asking you this. I think that if we can get some of the community to have interventions or programs, I mean, to churches and various places in the community where families can go and be able to learn about domestic, bring their children, the parent and the children can go and talk about issues that's going on, and we can have people that's qualified, counselors that's qualified to help them, as you said a few minutes ago, before the incident happens. Because if you start out cursing your partner or just criticizing, you know, there's many ways of domestic violence, right? Controlling and all the perks that points to domestic violence, that can lead into domestic violence, that can lead into being a crime, you getting yourself into trouble, possibly your life can be threatened with. And I'm a domestic violence survivor. I was shot in my liver, as a lot of my listeners already know, and my abuser took his own life. My two children, 6 and 9, saved my life. But I had no warning signs. But there are many warning signs out there. Just how can we get the community to have more places where families can go and learn about domestic violence, and get a lot of our experts, family services, involved in having discussions with the families, we said earlier, before they get themselves into that predicament. Now, if they're living in that environment, some of them are afraid to come out of the environment. How would you encourage, or what would you say to our listeners on today to encourage them how to come out of that environment before they wind up standing before you, being sentenced for a death sentence or being sentenced on an aggravated assault charge? What can you say to encourage the listeners on today how to prevent themselves?
Here's what I suggest. Here's an idea. All right. We have situations where you need help with food services. You need food benefit or SNAP. We have institutions set up to provide you food. We have institutions set up that if you need help with your utilities bills, we have where you can go into your community centers. We need to institutionalize in our community centers and our churches this idea of a family violence center or an office there where you can readily go in and lay out to a social service worker or a psychologist or a wellness individual what's going on with the relationship. We've got to make this easy. We've got to make it easy so that you don't stay at home and suffer, or you don't stay at home and take the abuse. So if that's going on, we want to be able to say to you, look in your community, here's a place where you can go directly. You don't, and if you have children, you can take those children with you, because you need to have security, and we need to make certain that your life is something that you can pick up and go on with if that's what you want to do. So what I'm calling for is community corrections. Let's call it community corrections. So just like in your circumstance, I don't know what triggered it. I don't know what happened, but I know if you were frightened and you were thinking about something happening, you needed to get out of there. You needed to go somewhere real quick, and you needed to be able to take up quickly and go with some security that you didn't need to have to worry about, well, who's going to pay the bill tomorrow? How am I going to get food? How am I going to get gas? We've got to bring community back into community. Right. And that's why I'm saying institutionalization of this would be the way I would go. Now, that would come from either the mayor's office or a community with foundations where you would have this kind of outreach and ready to go so that you could protect yourself.
Right. Now, Judge, you said in my situation, my abuser was out to take my life, but he took his life as well, like it was a suicidal love affair, whatever. But what I'm saying is I am blessed today to be here to tell my story. But there's so many, I didn't have any warning signs. It wasn't like we was calling each other's name or fighting or cursing each other. It wasn't anything like that. It happened all at once. Come home and said, look, I love you, Norma, and he went to shooting. You know, I didn't even have, it was a weird incident, but it still was an attempt on my life and nothing but the grace of God that I'm here today to share my story. But this is why it's important that the victims talk about it with somebody. You must be able to share with your family or friend. And a friend and family members, when you hear these stories, do not take it lightly. Get them help. If they don't have the courage or cannot go and get help for themselves, you find help for them. Get some way in touch with someone that can go and be able to help them come out of that environment. Now, today we have as our guest the judge, Judge Johnson, who sits in court. The victims and the abusers go before him, and he's pleading to the public to learn more about what the community can do to help our citizens to come out of that domestic violence environment, and not only listen to the stories of domestic violence, but try and help your community to bring about some type of awareness where we can be able to help the families or relationships before they actually find themselves in an environment to where they have to go stand before Judge Johnson or other judges and maybe have taken their partner's life or taken their wife or husband's life, and even some of them take their children's life. Judge, I just want to just share with our listeners on today how important it is. I know when you have to try a case that comes before you for someone who has battered their wife or their husband and either tried to take their life, in some cases may have been a murder case, how do you feel when you know that a victim has been brutalized and they come back before you one or two or three times and actually, as a judge, just give me, your point of view. How do you actually feel, and what is the breaking point to where you say, I cannot allow this person to go back out in the society. I must give them jail time or put them in some center to where they can get some type of treatment for domestic violence, if that's any, you know, is it, because I'm not a judge, but I can imagine if I was and had to oversee a case, you know, preside over such case, you know, because my heart goes out every time I hear of a domestic violence situation. Can you share that with our listeners on today?
First of all, I feel frustrated. I feel frustrated because I ask myself, what could I have done? What could my community have done to never let this get to this point? So, and this is when I'm addressing the conduct that I see. What could we have done that could have never got us here? And how we could have helped, particularly when there are children that are involved in the mix. And those children are being formed in their minds, and they're assessing the behavior of their parents, and they're trying to discern the dilemma that they're facing about which way to go, who to support, who to love, who to be for, and the choices that is being put upon the children to choose between the parents, and one is misdirecting the child against the other. So I'm frustrated with that. I'm very frustrated with that because I know as these children grow up, when there are circumstances where children are involved, that that is only traumatizing the children and making the outcome worse. So my first experience when I see this is about frustration, and then I'm concerned about the children when children are involved. Other than that, then I look at how and which way this relationship is going to go. So I'm interested in knowing, will or do this couple intend to remain together, or do they intend to go their separate ways? Because that is what is so critical into how I'm going to, that's going to be a critical factor in how I decide what the scope of the punishment is going to be and what the scope of the remedy is going to be. And not only that, what scope the treatment that I'm going to order, the nature of it and the length of it and the type of it. So I need to know, will this couple want to remain together? Because so frequently, Dr. Chapman, so often, more times than not, this couple is going back together. And that is a dilemma for the court, because if you're going back together, one side is feeling anger or resentment against the other for having been subject to being involved in a conviction and being sanctioned. And then the other one is saying, I still want that person because I still love that person and because I still need support of finances or assistance to rear the children. So it's a complicated type of case. But domestic violence is not the types of case where you don't know the victim, you're not involved with the victim. So it takes a different approach to it. So I ask this question. If you did not have, and I learned this from a judge many years ago when I was a young lawyer, if you did not have a successful marriage, how about we have a successful divorce? If you did not have, Dr. Chapman, a successful dating relationship, well, how about have a separation that is smart, that it doesn't involve criminogenic conduct? So we need to teach us how to separate. We need to teach us how to handle our emotions. And it starts with teaching and training. And when we have young people who have not yet understood what life is supposed to be about, or a certain value system was not embedded in them at an early age, it's very challenging, Dr. Chapman. I'll tell you the words I use. You say, okay, you want me to engage in rehabilitation. And I say, wow, I've got a lot of work to do, because you know what? I don't see a lot of habilitating there. So it's not rehabilitating. It's that I've got to habilitate. I've got to almost start from scratch. And that's mm-hmm. what, that's a lot of cases like that, Dr. Chapman.
I read so, when you was talking about incorporating a stronger force on jurisdiction and monitoring and use of specialized probation supervision. What would that be consist of?
Okay, would take for example. All right. So the domestic violence court would be a comprehensive court. So if you're found to be a defendant and you're guilty, what after I know, after this couple, I bring in the victim and I say to the victim and to the abuser, which way is this relationship going, separate or apart? Because if you're going to go separate, I'm going to design a separation plan that is going to work. I'm going to design a separation plan where the victim is safe and I'm going to assure safety. Not only am I going to do that, I'm going to institutionalize that victim or empower that victim with ways to control her or his safety from the other. So I'm going to put the defendant on high impact supervision, which means you're going to be in the community if you're out on probation with control measures. What are those control measures you're talking about, Judge Johnson? Number one, you will be required to have an ankle monitor with a GPS signal that tells me where you are 24 hours a day, tells the prosecutor where you are 24 hours a day, tells the law enforcement, the sheriff or the Baton Rouge Police Department, where you are 24 hours a day. And not only that, I will create with the geofencing a component and in a geographic area around the victim, where the victim lives, or and that won't be known by the defendant, or at least it won't be known the address, but the zone will be a protective area around the victim where he or she works, where she and he lives, and that kind of thing. So if the defendant gets within that zone, that's an automatic alert that goes to law enforcement in that community. Yes. That's an automatic alert that goes to the victim. And everybody knows that you're within this protected zone and you're not supposed to be in it. So I'm creating the use of technology, whereas now our victims are out there and they never know where the defendant is. They never know where the defendant may be headed to their environment. So part of my specialized probation will be to heighten the control measures around the defendant. And not only that, I'm going to have this. I'm going to have the defendant before the judge every 30 days to assess violations or to assess the need to change the probation or to order the defendant to jail. So it won't be open-ended. It won't be open-ended supervision. Those are a couple of the ideas that we're going to go in with.
Okay, well now, I have another question, but listeners, you can press that number one now on your phone. You do have time. You still have time to press that number one. If you have any questions, comments, or want to share your concerns about today's topic with our special guest, Judge Johnson, Chief Judge out of Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and his topic is Domestic Violence Intervention Court. Now, I pray that since technology is playing a big part in the world today, that can, because you're talking about that technique is when they're separated and to keep the abusers from going on their job or from stalking them. But what about they can make a device that can go off when there's trouble in the home, like when the argument gets started or when he gets started or he or she gets started being aggressive towards the other partner, something that one can press and they can get there before, you know, the argument gets started, stop it before it gets started. The technology now, Judge, they can make some type of device that can set that off. If they've been before you for domestic violence and they're repeatedly offended for domestic violence, something that can be set off when they get set off with their anger, that something can go off inside the home to let them know that person is in danger or something is about to occur in the home. I'm praying that maybe some technology are you understanding
okay.
what I'm saying?
Dr. Chapman, I sure do, and you're right. Part of my strategy is to embark upon technology to assist with prevention, intervention. So if that means housing issues with protective devices, such as cameras and alert signals, yes, we can embark upon that. Now, and here's the good thing I'm promoting. For these type of defendants and for these type of victims, this wouldn't be an expense upon the victim. This mm-hmm. would not be an expense upon the victim to make sure that victim is safe. If it's an alert button that she or he could push, if it's a device on the front of the house or the rear of the house with cameras, there are a lot of things that we could put together.
And what I'm
asking my community to do is to help me model this. Come
so
in and help me design something.
Exactly. We have so many nonprofits in our community, and they have money that's going in this here, going towards it. Why not give some money towards a nonprofit so they can be able to help the community to be able to get these devices, and they can be available to have certain services, this type of environment out of their communities. You see what I'm saying? So it's just going to be
yes.
something that everybody has to come together. And I love your vision. I mean, your vision that you're having, a judge that you want to put together, I think it'll make a big, big difference in somebody's life. Listeners, you still have a couple of minutes to press that number one. If you have any questions, comments, I just want to share your thoughts and experience on today's episode on today's presentation. Now, we do have a lot of listeners that's tuning in, Judge, and they're probably just taking in everything you're saying, and I thank God for them being available and listening on today's Facing Your Fears. And we do want you to talk a little bit, because you only have like 3 minutes left in the show, about where are you at now, but where are you going? My understanding is you're running in a race and an election coming up for appellate judge. Now, am I correct?
You are correct, Dr. Chapman.
So what you want to tell our listeners about that?
Okay. What I've done at the 19th JDC is to set up a behavioral health court model. A behavioral health court model. Now, that's going to be combined with the traditional criminal court model, which everybody knows about. It's our regular criminal court system, our regular criminal courts that are handling regular business. So what I've done now over the last 8 years is to move us to a twofold approach to crime, a regular traditional criminal court as well as a behavioral health criminal court. And the behavioral health court side involves multiple categories of specialized courts. And number one is the drug court. We call that the recovery court, where we treat people who are on probation. Number two is we have a pretrial court where you don't plead guilty. You are treated for your underlying causes getting you into crime, and you're never prosecuted. That's another type of rehabilitation or therapeutic court or behavioral health court. Now, we also have the reentry court. That's where you get a chance to avoid a long-term incarceration in prison. You get a chance to go in prison and come out in 2 years, but you must, and while you're there, you're in a special dormitory, and you're getting your skills and your trades, and you come out with your mm-hmm. skill sets and your licenses, and you have direct employment when you walk out of the door, out of prison. That's the reentry model. We also have now two new courts coming. The domestic violence court is the newest creation, and the one that we just recently got a grant for is the veterans treatment court. So those are the behavioral health court models. They are on the table. They're getting in place. They're the ones that we just created, and I want to get those effective the first part of January and February 2023, because I hope my community will say, Judge Don Johnson, you've done enough at the trial level. We're going to award you with a promotion to the Court of Appeal on November the 8th. So that's what I'm shooting for.
Wonderful. Well, listeners, we're almost to the end of our show. As a matter of fact, we're at the end of our show. But we want Judge Johnson to come back in the month of December, January, and he can share more with us on what he's doing in reference to what he was talking about, behavior, model of having help in the behavior area for our domestic violence victims that live in such environment, and also to help the victims to not to abuse their partners. We want to thank our listeners for tuning in on today. Thank you, Dr. Judge Johnson, for being a guest on Facing Your Fears Radio Talk Show. My prayers are with you as you go forward with the path God has put you on, and hopefully you'll come back soon and have another topic, interesting topic, to share with our listeners. Listeners, thank you again for tuning in on Facing Your Fears Radio Talk Show every Thursday evening from 4:30 to 5:30. And be sure to call back again if you want to be a part of the show or be a guest on the show. Feel free to contact me at norma_chapman@yahoo.com. You can go to my Facebook page, Facing Your Fears, What Faith Can Do, my personal page, Norma Chapman, or To Be Friends in Christ. This is our show for this evening. Thank all of you, and thank you, Judge Johnson, for being a special guest on today. And I'm saying farewell to everyone. Stay safe out there, and goodbye now. Goodbye to everyone. Goodbye, Judge Johnson.